Welcome to Diary 101 Podcast. I am your host, Akakandelwa Kandepwe. And welcome. It's a good day to have a podcast. Again, with one of my favorite people in the world. And I feel like this one, I'm keeping it in the family, which is so cool. And because I can, and I will drag everybody into this podcast to the future holds more guests. And she's really special because when I came to Lusaka, I got to volunteer for her organization. I got to work with her, and she inspires me to be better. And I'm always wondering, how does she look so cool and do what she does? And she makes the field of medicine so easy. Yeah. That's like one of my favorite things, is that how do you make life look so easy and cheeky, and you do the most, and the rest of us are like, is that normal? So yes, so today's guest, like I mentioned, is special, and I'm keeping it in the family, which is cool. Yeah, so I'd like us to welcome Dr. Kazana. Hi.
Hi, Aka. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Thank you for making the time. You're such a busy woman.
Finally, I reserved some time for this work.
Finally. It's been a lot of, let's do this today, then it doesn't work out, to let's do it tomorrow, and it doesn't work out. And today worked out, barely.
Yes, it so did. How are you? I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. So I have a quick question. You're a doctor from the introduction, right? You're a doctor, yes. Kazan.
Yes.
And from somewhere, I know I mentioned earlier, like I keep it in time, but I also mentioned in my first episodes that I'm really not the best at pronouncing surnames. So I always go with the easiest name. But one thing even with you.
After all these years,
it's hectic, but I'm grateful that you are still breathing fine. Mm-hmm. After all these years, one thing I'm always curious about is, I know you did your medicine in Zambia. You started from Zambia, then yes. You went to China, then you moved to the United States, and I'm like, those are like different cultures, from my experience. Mm-hmm. Those are different cultures. How did you even navigate that in the first place?
Okay, so in the beginning, I started with my pre-med back home in Zambia. And then most of my acquaintances were applying for scholarships abroad. And then what interested me to study abroad was the advanced technology that China was offering. So going to China in the beginning, it actually gave me a different perspective of the world in general. And it was the first time in my life I realized, oh, I'm a Black person, you know? Because when you're in that space, when you're back home, everybody looks like you. But when you travel outside, you get to realize that you're made aware of your skin color. So it was that experience that gave me a wake-up call to just appreciate how different people are and how people are viewed. And aside from that, learning a new language also was actually challenging because everybody in China speaks Mandarin. From the moment you land, everybody is speaking Chinese at the airport, on the plane. Like even the directions in the airport are in Chinese characters. So that was also part of a culture shock to me. And when it came to medicine, it was really interesting because the medical industry in China has a lot to offer in China's healthcare. Also because it's an era, this is a new era of full digitalization. They apply new technologies in disease prevention, diagnosis, surgery, and healthcare management. So I feel like that was my highlight for me in China, because in terms of them using AI and robotics into the healthcare space, and those are some things that I didn't see back home. And also moving to New York, moving to the United States, where 5.7% of physicians are Black in America. So having to come here as an international medical graduate and just navigating my way through the medical field and how their system operates has also given me an eye-opening to everything that I have accumulated in rotations back home and in China, and finally I'm here. I guess it makes the whole medical experience unique because I carry all these diverse cultures and experiences I've used. Yeah, so it's been okay. So far, so good. I'm what hoping to...
Oh. I'm so curious.
So, actually, it's just something that I always knew I wanted to do. I didn't see myself studying something else. And because I saw it as a way to contribute to the well-being of individuals and communities. And also medicine helps, it offers you the opportunity to make a positive impact in people's lives. While in medical school, most of my peers chose the conventional path of clinical care. And I know that's equally important, but I decided to focus my attention on preventive medicine, because I fully believe that prevention can save millions of dollars in the healthcare. And I think that was my view when I was heading into the medical field.
There's so many things I'd like to pick on when you talk about prevention medicine, because mm-hmm. then that reminds me of back in 2019, I volunteered for your organization, which is like the 2030 Nutrition Project. And we were working on child nutrition. And when we're working on child nutrition, we're focusing on the prevention side, not the effect side. So when you're talking about prevention medicine, it's like, so what inspired you to start that project in the first place in Zambia?
So after my 6-week fellowship at the University of Delaware under the SUSI program, when I came back home, I realized that 35% of the population was struggling to meet their minimum calorie requirements. So this was particularly harsh on pregnant and lactating mothers, as well as children from impoverished households. So I volunteered at the University Teaching Hospital under the malnutrition healthcare. And there was this little boy that was brought to the hospital. And then he had malnutrition, his eyeballs were sunken, he had pitting edema. And after a few weeks of catch-up growth, and this boy was okay, he was running around the hospital after a few weeks. And then he was brought back the following month. So motivated by that firsthand experience in the malnutrition ward, I decided to found the 2030 Nutrition Project to address triple challenge of health inequity among women, poor nutritional practices, especially from these low-income communities, and the elevated infant mortality in the female households. So I guess that's what motivated me to start the project.
This goes back to one of my favorite questions is, we have something in common. I also did the SUSI program, which was last year, and you did it like 2018, if I'm not wrong, right?
Yes, 2018.
You did it in 2018? That's so cool. And I did mention like our family, and you got to visit me in the United States. And one of my favorite moments was realizing at the end to say, this project I volunteered for in 2019 was actually something I did in something I'm doing now in 2023. So like, what's like your favorite highlight of your stay in the United States in 2018 at the University of Delaware?
Okay, so the study of the U US Institute, the SUSE program, it was the genesis of my leadership journey because it made me realize that there was more to life, you know. I was really focused on medicine and I didn't know that you could fuse the two together, like you can be a leader in medicine and whatnot. So I think my highlight was me presenting the project at the end of the program because in that moment, I didn't fully understand and realize what I was getting myself into. And just to watch that project flourish and blossom from a simple idea in a UD dorm to something that I speak about in different parts of the world and how much and how many lives it's impacted. So I think coming up with the idea in that space was one of my highlights at the University of Delaware. And also learning more about the leadership experience. It really bolstered my policy analysis acumen through the leadership skills building activities, the community service, and the opportunity I got to interact with different young leaders from all over the world. Yeah, I guess, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorite thing is for you guys, it was study for the US Institute. For us, yes. Last year, it was study for the U.S. Institute, Madeleine Albright Young Leaders Leadership. Oh. It's so long. It's like, okay. I student. It's so long. But one thing I realized about them is when you came to Kansas, that was my campus. So they switched campus from Delaware to Kansas, was apart from our other highlights from the state, was talking about relationships, you meeting some of my SUSE sisters from 2023, interacting with them. Do you see any changes in the program? Like you and you're an alumni from 2018.
Like
it was just like 8 months ago. So like do you see any differences and what do you take from the whole transitioning to the new one, which is like study for the U.S. Institute, Madeleine Albright Young Leaders Fellowship, I think.
I do see a lot of changes because in the beginning, in 2018, so we had the Africans were at the University of Delaware, the Asians were, I think they were at Kansas or something, and then the Americans and the girls from Southeast Asia were also at a specific school. But when I realized this, was it last year? Last year, you guys are now integrated. Like you, they mixed you guys. Like you have a number of girls this side. You have different cultures in the same university. For us, it was different. And the reason they put us like that was all the African sisters have similar problems. So it's going to be easy for them to it's going to be easier for them to work in that space together. I don't know if I am making sense. So I feel like it's more diverse now and it's easier to learn because I remember when we were in Delaware, we were always thinking, oh, what is like in Kansas? Oh, I wish we were in Maryland. Oh, I wish because we wanted to see the other girls because we only saw the girls on the first day. I think so. I feel like a lot has changed during our time at the University of Delaware.
And I think that's so cool because sometimes it feels like the same people were the same people that are heading it. I don't know how true is that. And I think you guys got to visit DC and visit more countries, which is cool because I like my university, but our town was really boring. To be honest.
And hot.
And hot. I know. You kept saying it's so hot here. And I'm like, yeah. It was so hot in Kansas, in Lawrence, because we're in Lawrence at the University of Kansas. And bringing you back to the project you picked as the Leadership for Change project, which is your LCP. When you came for my Leadership for Change project presentation and we had our conversation and I got to realize that, oh, so this project I was working on and volunteering for three, four years ago is what I am doing now. It's kind of inspiring because I didn't tell you I was applying for the SUSE program when I was applying for the SUSE program. I did tell you I went to the United States, but I did tell you after I applied for this program, but I did not know that that was the same program you applied for, and it also did not click.
And
No, it didn't. Like, it's always my, like when I saw you in that auditorium and I saw everybody presented, because you're not present for mine, you were late, as always.
Yes.
I got to say, no, you did the same program that I did.
Yes, like, it was exactly the same program.
Yeah, the same program, like, but like in a space of 5 years. Have you ever thought about how you inspire other young people, including me, to say, like I met you in 2019 after you did the program. We didn't have this whole conversation, but you do mentor me in different ways. Do you ever think about how you mentor other young people around the world?
Actually, I've never thought of that, to be honest. Because that certain times where I feel like, oh, am I doing too much? Or am I doing the right thing? Am I in the right space? And you never know who's watching. I would get DMs from other young people that are also in the professional field, and they'll be like, oh, how do you get these programs? Oh, how do you find yourself at the UN? Oh, how did you start the nutrition project? So it hasn't yet clicked to me that, oh, I might be inspiring someone, but honestly, I've never thought of that.
Yeah,
it's good to hear that I inspired you. Yeah,
it's good indirectly. You have not mentored me directly, but since I am in the circle for years and we're family, it's easy for me, you know, like birds of the same feathers flock together kind of thing, right?
Yes.
But for me, when you came to Kansas last year, was like, and then you talked to like Dr. Mary, I was like, you were here, like you're in Delaware, right? But like, we did the same thing. We're from the same family in a space of 5 years. Like, do you realize how the birds of the same feathers flock together? Scenario actually is true for us in our family. Like, like we didn't have the conversation to say, Aka, you apply for this, you do this. And that's the thing about the two of us. Like, you don't tell me, you do this. I always have the initiative to say, oh, I want this in my life, and I have seen this work for other people. How do I move from this step? Because I just inform you to say, oh, I'm doing this now. I'm like, oh, so cool, congratulations. So it's like, it's, you kind of have to always remember that somehow your influence is floating one way or another. I hope you know that.
Thank you. Actually, I haven't really, now coming to think of it now, I'm actually proud that you took the step forward to apply for the SUSE. The SUSE Leadership Program. And it's actually great to hear that I inspired you. So many, there are many people out there that I'm inspiring, and I have no idea, you know. So I'll actually take that into consideration and just be more open-minded to know whose lives I'm impacting or whose lives I'm inspiring, you know.
Yeah, you should. I feel like it's something you don't consciously take in, and it's something I'd like you to consciously take in, because I still volunteer for your organization, even if I'm not actively doing anything now.
Yes.
And we've worked with so many young people, so many children, and now I always look back to say, that was fun. The first time I talked on TV was because of the 23rd Nutrition Project. I did not know what I was saying. But they were like, yay, there's a TV thing you need to do. Please go. I'm like, I don't want to go. But I still did it, right?
Yeah.
And you're such a good leader to always give space and help your organization grow, help other young people grow. And I don't want to take that away. So have you ever thought, like, this isn't your space? Like, Everybody talks about imposter syndrome, and you're a very successful young lady, by the way. So have you ever thought about the, yeah, you inspire me every time. Have you ever thought about like your imposter syndrome, if you ever experience it, especially that you speak on international stages now? Like you go for these conferences. I always say, how do I go for those conferences? I'm always texting and say, how do I do this? How do I speak in front of people? You do this. You have been to different universities around the world. You were in Zambia, China. You're now working in the United States, in New York. Have you ever thought like, yeah, this isn't my space at one point?
Yeah, I always feel like I'm an imposter. You know, there are times where I feel like I don't belong. But time changes a lot of things, and I've come to understand and acknowledge that it's a common feeling, you know, among individuals, among people in the healthcare space. And I think most people have imposter syndrome, and I personally recognize that feeling. And it's also a normal part of growth and learning. And when you're pushing boundaries and taking up new challenges, I feel like it's normal to feel like you're an imposter at times. But I've tried to avoid that by learning to seek guidance when necessary. And whenever I'm nervous, I just tell myself, oh, I belong here. I belong in this space. There's a reason why I'm here. And yeah, I think it's a normal thing to have imposter syndrome. It really never goes away. You just have to recognize it and just tell yourself, and you're pushing boundaries, so it's okay to feel like that. But yeah, you never get used to it, honestly. You never get used to it.
I thought I'd get used to it. For real, it's like I'm always doing something new. Always, you know this, I might not share.
You're always up to something.
I'm always up to something low-key. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, why I'm always low-key about it is because I don't feel like that's my space. The most public I've ever gone about something is the podcast. It's like, I'm going to embarrass myself every Tuesday. It's like the most public I have ever gone with a project. But I'm always doing something. And at first, when I was seeking your guidance, you made it easy for me to fail. You said, it's okay, even if you don't understand, just wing it. I'm always winging it in life. And that's so refreshing, because I always say this to people. You take mentorship one way or another. It can either be informal or informal. Like it can be formal or informal. What you just need to understand is, how are you going to take people's advice? Because you always have to have people you look up to. And like, I would like to follow your success. And sometimes success looks different, and you don't have to follow somebody's success in a particular way. And this is like one of the reasons why you're also like one of my first guests, because you've impacted my life for so many years. You still do that in different ways. And I just want to know, like, what's like one of the things you take when you are speaking on international stages? Like, what's your tip when you go for those international stages?
I feel like the secret is, once you find your niche, everything just follows through and everything just flows. Because from speaking at the United Nations headquarters and speaking to more than 2,000 civic leaders in Manchester, I was talking about the nutrition project. And once you study what you already know, it's like someone will just wake you up at 2 a.m. and you already know what they're about to ask, and you're going to just say it, you know? So I feel like you just need to learn what you're good at in terms of a specific topic. If I give an example of you probably maybe having done finance, it's finance, right?
Best believe my own relatives don't know what they actually studied in university. Yeah, it should be finance. We have to confirm when I graduate, but it should be finance.
Yeah, finance. Like anybody would ask you questions from finance and you're ready to answer. So I feel like once you just learn your niche, it's easier to navigate your space on wild stages. And also the experiences, they usher you into a lifelong network of multidisciplinary change makers. So you get to learn a lot from different people around the world. And yeah, it's also, you know, you actually get nervous before going on stage. And something, okay, wait, you're going to edit this, but this is something that happened, right? You know my video from Manchester, you know, I've never heard that video before. Like, I've never watched the video.
I have not watched it yet, by the way. I need to watch it. I heard it was good from others.
Others were saying, oh my God, you spoke so well, da 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 da. I've never taken the time to just listen to my own voice. Most of the podcasts that I do and the videos that I do, I've never taken the time to just...
I hope you listen to this podcast.
Yes, this one I have to. I have to listen to this one. Yeah, so I think find your niche. The secret is just find your niche and just take time to polish what you already know. And everything will just flow.
And I think that's like one interesting factor is finding your niche. But it's also very hard to find your niche if you don't explore. I think one thing about the two of us is we've explored. Like, I have explored so much. I've worked with you when it comes with the nutrition project. I've worked in finance. I've worked with people that with organizations that were talking about climate change. And now with everything, I just said, well, I would like to just stick to SDG 8 that has to do with employment, youths, and entrepreneurship, because that's my niche and that's like something I really feel like I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't really find time to do something they're good at. What's your favorite highlight? I know you were in Zambia when we were doing one of your projects for the 2013 Nutrition Project, and we're visiting a lot of children, schools, communities. Like, what's your favorite highlight and your story when it comes to the 2013 Nutrition Project?
I think my favorite highlight was during COVID, when most schools that had the feeding program had shut down, and then I got the grant from One Young World, and we impacted so many lives during that process. And also that period helped me understand that rather than giving out food hampers, we can actually teach these kids how to grow their own food. So just making the whole project independent on its own by it not becoming like a donation. Like, it shouldn't be, how can I put it? Like, I didn't want the organization to depend on grants, you know? So I realized that there was more that we could do, like the food gardening program, and also looking at schools that had feeding programs and like going to the hospitals to deal with the malnutrition wards. So I feel like that was the highlight for me with the project, and just seeing the project grow and the lives that it's impacting.
I know, right? We went from having 3 volunteers to having 10 volunteers on board. I feel like that was growth for me, because I started from the beginning.
Yes, from the get-go.
From the get-go? Like, I'm your girl for a lot of stuff. You also know that.
Yes,
I said from the beginning to the get-go. And one thing I realized, like, we didn't actually go in depth what the 2013 Nutrition Project is about. So, like, what's the 2013 Nutrition Project about?
Okay, so the 2013 Nutrition Project is a project that focuses on maternal and child health, and mostly on nutrition. So it's a program that targets the root causes of dire situation, including caregivers' limited knowledge of nutrition, the poor feeding practices in Zambia, and our approach is also informed by the 3 P's framework, which is to prevent the leading causes of death in women, especially in cases of malnutrition. It's also protecting the health of mothers and children, and ultimately promoting inclusion of women and women in health systems by eliminating disparities in the healthcare system. So, and for
that's
the...
I'm saying that's so interesting.
Yes.
You're about to say something? Please go on.
No, no, no. It's okay. It's okay.
It's okay. I would like to highlight that the 2030 Nutrition Project started with outreaches at hospitals and going to talk to the mothers at the hospitals to actually going to community schools, having the outreaches, the feeding program, the gardening. So it grew from just one hospital to several schools in a few years. How did you feel about that growth?
Actually, it's been a learning experience for me, because in the beginning, when I started the project, I was thinking about so many things. I was thinking about the app. I was thinking about starting a new therapeutic porridge for these kids. I had so many ideas, but just getting on the ground and understanding what's really going on and understanding where the problems are coming from. So I feel like when I targeted the preventing side, it was easier for me to navigate my space in that area, because not only is the government doing something, but also realizing that 0.50% of the US dollar is allocated to each child under 5 for nutrition specific interventions. So I feel like interacting with more caregivers, the medical practitioners back home that are also working on these malnutrition projects, and also the government leaders, and also partnering with many organizations that are doing something similar, it has helped me understand that there's more that I can do and there's more that has to be done with the project.
I know, right? Like, the 2030 Nutrition Project will always be like one of my favorite projects in the world. It's like very uncomfortable. Like, it's if I'm told to speak about it now, it's you have to read and ask cover later, because I would get so nervous, like you got earlier, to just speak about it. Because you also see the impact it has. You interact with the healthcare people and the teachers, and you get to also have an inter, and you get to see the impact they think you have and have conversations. What do you think is next for the project?
So for the project, I have set an audacious goal. I want to empower more women and children in Zambia by the year 2030. I'm also focusing on expanding our existing programs to other provinces of the country. And to achieve this, I want to foster my leadership capacity and foster relationships with influential entities such as the Women Parliamentaries, the Food and Nutrition Commission of Zambia. That's also one organization I would want to work with, and also key agencies like the, including UNICEF and the World Food Program. So yeah, I'm looking at scaling it and also development for also working into a development for a life-saving, ready-to-use therapeutic nutrition supplement that is going to be designed to combat severe wasting and malnutrition in these low household communities.
Hearing you speak is like you're speaking big, big goals. Like, relax. Please. Like, leave room for the rest of us. But it also makes me curious to know who inspires you. Like, who's the one person that inspired you to go an extra mile for your leadership, your career, and any other project you decide to do, go on?
That is very interesting.
It's a good question.
it's a good question, because, you know, I've never really thought about it, because okay, I think so many women inspire me. So many women inspire me to go an extra mile, starting from my mother who believes in me and who has always pushed me to take the extra mile. I also look at women like Michelle Obama, and I also have other women that I look up to that have studied, that came here as international medical graduates and are thriving in the medical space. So I have so many people that inspire me, and, you know, I've never really like sat down and thought, who has really inspired me? But it's a collection of so many women in the healthcare space.
Yeah. I have to admit, I love your mom. She's putting it out here when she listens to this. Hi, Key Loki. Love your mom. And it's very interesting that you came up with this project when you're at the SUSE program. One thing about this was my podcast with you, I didn't want to center it on the SUSE program like I'm doing with some of my SUSE sisters. Like, you're okay. A SUSE sister, but you're like a special case kind of SUSE sister. So I'm debating on what I'm going to do about this situation. Okay. But because this is like something in the medical field, and you're a doctor, by the way.
Yes.
I have not been mentioning this, please. I'm sorry. I forget.
It's okay.
I forget because we're close. Mm-hmm. Everybody says it. I'm like, I forgot that factor. Because me, it's just like, it's Kazana, but then it's others, it's like doctor, which is so cool. What is next for your field in medicine? Like, what do you see yourself doing next?
Like I said, I focused on the preventive side of medicine. So I'm thinking going into public policy, which is like public health for the medical healthcare system. And I'm also thinking about matching into residency and just exploring more residency opportunities here in the United States. I think those are my short-term goals for now. And yeah, aside from the project, those are my short-term goals right now.
And I'd like to remind you that you also did residency in Zambia, and you've also been doing it in America. So I'm so curious. I'm always complaining about the healthcare in Zambia to you. So what's the difference? I know, like, okay, it's America, I get it, but how far do you see Zambia off? Like, how many years do we have to reach to the developed side of the country's type of healthcare?
Zambia really has a long way to go, but I feel like what's holding us back home is the way the healthcare system is designed. And also technology-wise, the West has evolved so much, and there's so much we can do. We have very competent doctors back home, but I feel like they're limited by the resources that are provided. So we are almost catching up, but we still have a long way to go. Especially now that most healthcare systems have advanced into digitalization, and people back home are still writing things on pieces of papers. Here, everything is computerized, and they're introducing AI in these in these healthcare spaces. So, I feel like we have a lot to learn and a long way to go, but we are almost there. We're almost there.
It never
sounded like a lie.
I was listening to you and I'm just like, yo, these are things we tell each other in my family. Well, thank God we are almost there. But I always like having this conversation. But one thing I'm doing on this podcast with the people closest to me is giving them an opportunity to ask me a question. So do you have a question for me, ma'am?
Oh, yes, I do. Okay. What is inspired you to start this podcast?
Good.
And what kind of individuals are you targeting? Like, what kind of individuals are you targeting for your podcast?
So what inspired me was after I really have good conversations with the people in my circle, and I was
Okay.
always hoping that I could help people tap into that. I feel like I am privileged to have so many people that inspire me like you to go an extra mile and do my best. So I'm like, oh, a lot of people might not have access to these people. So if I could actually just create a platform that a lot of people tap into these conversations and get inspired, that would be great. Like I would want such a platform. So
Okay.
when firstly in 29 in 2020, no, in 2019, somebody was like, let's start a podcast. I never felt good enough to start a podcast. Like I'm not smart enough. Like it's like I don't think I have anything to share about the podcast. I had a date with my brother in 2021 and I met a girl. She was also talking about, I'm starting a podcast. I was like, I also want to start a podcast. But she started her podcast and it's doing great. I didn't. I still felt like I wasn't good enough for the podcast. The third time is always the charm, I think. So after the SUSE program, when I did my LCP, I didn't feel like it was good enough. And because I had really good conversations with the people in America, my friends around the world, I was like, oh, I'd like to show people that everybody's struggling, but everybody's trying to change the world in their own way. That's how I was set with the podcast system. I was like, I'm starting the podcast because I really do have good connections. I actually have something to share to the world. And I'd like people to tap into my circle of friends. And I'd like to tap into other circles of connections and just bring them on this platform and people to hear these conversations. So that's how I decided. It's weird. Yeah, like that's I've always wanted to have a podcast. So it's like I finally did it.
I'm so proud of you. You're doing a great
Thank
job
you.
so far. You're
I
doing a
am
great job.
trying my best. I am trying my best. And it's so sad we're coming to the conclusion of this. But it's a, the simplest questions I have like two. What's your favorite childhood memory? When you look back, it makes you feel like, ah, oh, that made sense. And it also speaks to the person I am right now. I know this wasn't on the list of questions, but
Yeah. Oh, yes. I do have a favorite childhood memory. So there was this one time I was in primary school, and then they told us to write what we wanted, like what we wanted to be. And then I wrote down in my English notebook saying, oh, I want to be a doctor. I want to help lives, you know, the usual, oh, I want to save lives. And then when I went to school, apparently my mom still had that book and she took a picture of the story. And then she's like, oh, look, you're living in one of your dreams and prayers. And I'm like, oh, this is actually something that I've always wanted to be. And we get in that space where we're overwhelmed with what's happening around us. We're always looking for what's next. Okay, I achieved this. What's next? But we tend to forget to just appreciate yourself in a moment, in that moment that you prayed for, in that moment that you were longing for. So yeah, I think that's one of my childhood memories, if I come to think of it.
Yeah, and I think this is something I learned from you a lot. I'm always the what next, like we mentioned earlier, to say there's always something I'm up to. Like which is sad. It's never enough, but lately I'm always like, you're doing good enough. You're good enough. So you're okay. And always tapping into your grace to say, and maybe this is why I talk to you the most, to say, you're okay. Like, don't pressurize yourself to go above and beyond. Because I'm starting to feel like I get it from like one of my brothers to be an overachiever. For no apparent reason, I'm an overachiever and my competition is myself. So I'm kind of glad. Like I think one of my favorite is I always said I wanted to be rich and own a business. And now I own a business. It's like living in my dream. May I never forget that? But I'm so grateful. And So sad. I feel like this is like one of my favorite conversations because of our family. And yeah, I always
Okay.
said my favorite people, but now I'm saying it's because of our family, just to differentiate everybody. What do you look forward to?
I think I look forward to learning more and growing and just evolving as a person and being open-minded to just receive gratitude and receive more knowledge and just explore what other talents I might have that I haven't yet discovered. So, yeah.
Whoa,
I'm looking
that's
forward to grow. Yeah.
thank you so much, Kazana, for showing up for this podcast. Thank you so much for being a sister and family to me. And thank you so much for being one of the first people believing in me and pushing me beyond my limits. It's kind of hard to look back and say, would I ever have been this successful if I didn't have people push me from the beginning to go an extra mile and just work extra hard, like work for the things? And you taught me the fundamentals of volunteering. And what I take from this conversation is show up as yourself, believe that everything will kind of fall in place in the end. And yeah, have a really strong connection. Like I do, like me, one thing I always talk about is my community of friends, family, and those that have always believed in me. And you're like one of my favorites in that circle. So yeah, thank you so much. And I really do love you.
I love you too.
So that's the end of today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you're at the end, please share if it inspired you. Please share to somebody, follow, subscribe, and leave comments for us. And yeah, give us feedback. So this was a Diary 101, and thank you. Bye. Happy Tuesday.
Bye.